Hi, and welcome to another episode of Django Chat. I'm Carlton Gibson. I'm joined as ever by Will Vincent. Hi, Will.
Hi, Carlton.
Hello. How are you doing?
I'm good. So today's special episode week for me, I just released my new book, Django for Professionals, which I've been working on for over a year. And so I thought in this episode, we're going to talk about what makes a website production ready in Django and what's that leap from, you know, the defaults you have when you spin up Django with SQLite and all these other nice things to like a real website you would deploy to thousands or millions of people.
Because this is the step you're covering in the book, right? Your first two books, Django for Beginners, Django for APIs.
Yeah, so that's sort of like beginner, intermediate, advanced. This is like modern, up-to-date, very cutting-edge techniques that Django developers are using on the biggest sites in the world and sharing it with everyone.
That sounds very exciting.
Yeah, I mean, it's the book all three books I wish existed when I was learning Django, and I especially wish this book existed because having done this for several years now and talking to lots of developers, there's just a huge gap between, as I said, you know, spinning up a simple blog and something that you would do in a professional setting. And there's just no good resources out there. And having spent a year banging my head on this, I kind of understand why that's a challenge. But we can talk through, you know, what those things are that make something production ready and kind of where, I mean, because you can go up to certain things and say, okay, this, everyone agrees that these are steps you should take. And then it goes into the realm of purely subjective and hyper complex. And so in the book, I go right up to that point and then I discuss options, but I don't, you know, there are some things that are sort of philosophical debates around web design in general, and, you know, Django itself can't solve those.
Right. And different deployment plans. You might take one, you might take another. It's not
necessarily right.
It's right for you.
In the book, we deploy with containers, which is very new and sexy, in part because I wanted to show it, in part because it's easier, but also I talk a lot about deployment, but it's not a book on deployment. I mean, you could have a 500-page book on just, you know, deployment for one platform provider, let alone the dozens that are out there. So I had to draw the line in some places.
You've got the Amazon docs, you've got the Microsoft Azure docs. It's like, you know, they're big. Anyway.
Well, yeah, and one of the things, I mean, so in the book you use Docker, you build an online bookstore with payments and a whole bunch of other goodies we'll go through. But we deploy with Heroku, partly because I think it's one of the easiest ones out there. But even Heroku, I mean, it took me quite a while to sort out the docs on containers. We use Stripe, we use SendGrid, and, you know, these third-party platforms, it's hard to figure out how to use them. I don't quite understand why they can't have a basic guide for all the, you know, 5-6 major web frameworks out there, but for whatever reasons, they can't.
But is that because they're pushing forwards and, like, so the Docker deployments are somewhat new, and so they just haven't had the time to backfill the documentation?
I'm not sure. I mean, so let me pick on Stripe slightly, because I love Stripe as a company. I think it's the best payment processor out there. But so Stripe is rolling out a brand new, so we use checkout in the book. They're rolling out a brand new API, which is not fully documented yet. And I know this because I have some friends who work on checkout there who I complain to saying, hey, I'm having trouble with this. And I've written official Stripe tutorials for Meteor and for other platforms. So, I mean, I know how Stripe works and I'm struggling with this. And I keep saying, like, you should just have a basic guide that's up to date. Pick one engineer, like, you know, 1 hour a week and just go Rails, Django, Express, I don't know, PHP flavor.
Yeah.
And even if it's, and just show how to do a basic implementation. And I think it's a combination of, yeah, they're pushing forward. They're constantly changing things. I think they feel if they do an official guide, there's just too many layers of, I think, bureaucracy, honestly.
But is it,
I don't know, but it's an opportunity for me as a teacher to wade through it. But it is one of the challenges of this book is that a modern Django stack has a lot more than Django in it. And so I found myself repeatedly fighting with non-Django things. Docker would be an example. And
yeah.
I want to use it and show how to do it, but it's not a book on these other things.
Right,
I think when people read the book, it will probably seem like, well, what's the big deal with Docker? Because I, for example, like, or Stripe, like, I make it as simple as can be and yet accurate. But it took me a ton of work to figure out how to do that because these are kind of untested things in a way. I mean, Stripe is literally changing its API. I mean, Docker, there's so many different ways that experts do it. So ultimately, I had to pick one and then really understand how it all fits together to try to make it simple because it's not a book on Docker. It's a book on Django.
But Docker's always constantly evolving still. It's still quite a young
technology.
Yeah,
it's a million lines.
You know, so yeah. I learned it, and then a year later I come back, and it's like all the command invocations I learned for mounting volumes—they've all changed now. It's not volumes; it's mounts. It's
look at you, Carlton. Yeah, you know that. Yeah, I mean, it's not as bad as like React or something, but it's ever changing. And I mean, the big issue with Docker, I mean, so we use Docker in the book because you can have a containers, which I speak about, so you can have an isolated operating environment. And that is good for your development. That's good if you're working on teams. That's good for pushing to production. I think this is a new thing that will become more and more common where you, the containers that you use locally, you push those up into production. That actually makes it easier to switch platforms if need be. You don't get locked into a certain platform provider, but it's all new. And specifically with Django, there's issues around when you're working with software packages, if you use pip or pipenv. So we use pipenv in the book, and you have lock files, and you basically have this tension between, am I working locally or within Docker? And anyways, in the book, I'm very pleased with how it turned out, but it was probably a solid 4 months journey for me to iron out the Docker parts. But it's important because that's what most developers are using these days. They are using Docker, but they're doing it in, not everyone is doing it this way. Many are, but it's not a, there isn't a canonical guide to it. So I sort of had to,
you're kind of documenting the documenting the landscape beyond the bleeding edge, right? You're right there.
Well, because if you ever look at, you know, there are some open source Django projects out there that use Docker, and it's like being dropped into like a 100-year war. There's just like so much code and so many decisions. And, you know, I find it overwhelming. So in this book, we just go step by step and we build up all the things that you need. And that's a lot of work to do. And I think also a lot of people don't do that because most people don't have the luxury of starting a big project from scratch. Maybe if you're at a consultancy, even then, I think it's rare. So most people aren't, you know, user registration, for example. Like I spend a lot of time on this because I do build a lot of new projects, but most people don't. You know, you airdrop into a project or you start something and barrel through, and then you kind of are in the mud and mire. But if you had a clean slate, how would you do that? So that's an example. One of the chapters we talk about using custom user models, but we also talk about abstract user, abstract base user, customizing all the templates using Django auth. So the first half of the book is really standard steps that you would use in any new project. So configuring static files, environment variables, that's basically going to be the same in any project. And then the second half, we focus on the bookstore. But again, we focus on things that are meant to be universal. So we talk about permissions. We talk about search, payments, file image uploads, security, performance, testing. Yeah.
And these are all the hard bits, right? These go beyond the tutorials. These go beyond, you got to create these stuff yourself. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah. And I mean, we joke that the tagline for this podcast should be, it depends, because I think we both find it frustrating when someone says, it depends, you know, especially engineers. And you know, so in this book, I really didn't want to just throw my hands up and say it depends. I really wanted to take an opinionated, make opinionated choices, but back them up and say, you know, I feel confident saying this is something that this is a Django best practice. And then if we get to a certain point, say, okay, now here's where there's a diversity of opinions. Here's what they are. I'm going to give you mine and show you that. But trying to draw that line of, you know, where is it more my opinion versus the community's opinion?
Yeah, and showing a way of doing it whilst acknowledging it's not the one true way is perfectly reasonable, right?
Right. So that was some of the challenges of this book. I mean, the first two books didn't take this long to write, but I'll probably write a blog post on things I've learned when I've had a couple of weeks to settle on this. But I think, yeah, writing an advanced book is a lot harder because it's, you know, more figuring out the technology, and also just more and more you're bumping against these debates within the community on how to do things. So
it's not settled. I mean, one of the I call it a meme. I don't know if it's a meme, but one of these ideas that comes back again and again is that you need to use you need to be somewhat conservative in your technology choices because otherwise you're spending too much time thrashing about what's on new. But deployment is still an unsettled project, and all the practices about how you get your static files in the right place and exactly how you serve them. What did you choose there, by the way?
For deployment?
Yeah. No, for static files, just while it's in my head, because there are a few different passages.
Well, so we configure it properly, which, you know, creating the directories, we configure media files. We use white noise.
Okay.
But yeah, that's another example of, we're just jumping all over the place, but that's fine. Like when you, so let's say you've used Docker, you set things up, then within Docker, you can create a separate production environment within Docker, which you need to if you go through, Django has this fantastic deployment checklist. So even if you're using a production database like Postgres, beyond debug, there's a whole list of things you need to fiddle with to be secure when you go online. I mean, we've talked about this in some of the other podcasts. We need to harden the admin.
Set the security CSRF, headers, which we talked about on a previous episode.
Yep, HTTP strict transport security, secure cookies, there's forcing SSL, clickjacking. There's a whole list of things that if you haven't done before, you really should do. But again, there's an 80-20 on everything, especially with deployments and security. I mean, you can spend all your time on this stuff, and at some point you have diminishing returns. And yet there is like some bare minimum things you absolutely should do, allowed hosts, for example. So we cover the 80-20, and then I talk about, and here's where you can go nuts on it, but there's always more to do. And so I tried to pass along at least what I think is good judgment and how you spend your time and how do you get as what the bare minimum, and then be aware of here are the next steps to take.
There is a bare minimum as well, though, because there are automated bots, automated scripts out there that are checking every available port on every IP they can find on the internet for known weaknesses. So if you don't get over the baseline, it's not a question that of if your application is hacked, it's just when it's hacked. So there is a minimum bar. You have to get that far, and then, depending on your threat model, you might need to go further.
Right. I mean, and I would say you got to turn debug off. You got to have SSL. You should change your admin URL. That's the top three, if I would say. But there's a bunch more. And again, Django has this deployment checklist. But I think the challenge is actually more configuring how you have, two different local environments. So this is where environment variables come in, which we use, because how before Docker, it was a lot harder to test your production environment not in production. Like there's jokes about like, yeah, I'll just toss it on production and do it live. Docker makes that a lot easier, where you can actually within a container have these production settings, run these things, check them. You could do it on a staging server. You probably should as well, but to be able to do it locally, it's just fantastic actually that you can use a Docker. So we go through that in the book, but it's a lot to keep in your head. You have local databases, production databases, you have local environments, production environments, and that goes across the board with all these settings. You want different things locally because you want to be fast and you don't want to have all the security stuff, but in production you do want to switch things around. I mean, the server, right? The default Django server, you don't want to deploy with that. You want to
No,
use
it's no, you really
Unicorn
don't.
or uWhiskey.
Yeah. So, what did you choose there? You've chosen Green Unicorn, Gunicorn, whichever however you
Yeah,
say it.
am I
I
saying
never
around
know.
Gunicorn?
I
Yeah,
never know how you say any of these things. Some
I
people, I
know.
heard it
Yeah.
called Green Unicorn at Eurocon, DjangoCon Europe, and I was like, Green
And
Unicorn?
I
I
tried
thought
to
it's called a
explain this
Gunicorn.
sometimes,
20
like
down here.
I'll casually mention it to like my wife or someone non-technical, and they're like, "What?" I'm like, "Django ponies and G unicorn," and they're like, "What are you doing?" So
Anyway,
yeah,
so
I
you
use
chose.
unicorn just because. Well, actually, no, I did. I gave thought to this. I've used it myself in projects, and also it is a little bit simpler to set up. uWhiskey has more configuration options, so I think if you need it, you might want uWhiskey. But as a default, and certainly as a teaching tool, GUnicorn is the approach I chose.
Yeah, and as well, like there's something in I heard talking about naming, I heard uWhiskey, but I've always called it uWhiskey. I heard someone call it micro whiskey, the
Oh,
DjangoCon in Europe as well.
is
And
that
I was
not a different
like,
thing?
well, it could be like the Greek letter there, whichever one that is. I never know these things. But the
I thought you're
point
like a
being,
classics major, Carl. Aren't you like a
no,
classic
philosophy.
philosophy
I
person?
sort of do classics on the part time. That's my sort of hobby. I'm learning ancient Greek to so I can be an old man and read Plato in the original. But that's for another podcast. What was I going to say? I was going to say something really great there. Oh yeah. So in the uWhiskey docs, it says this is great if you're building a like a hosting platform or something, right? It's deliberately more complicated because it's for, if you want to be able to provide a hosted environment for people to put their Django apps in, then uWhiskey perfect. But if you're deploying your own app, you don't need any of that. So GunnCon's a lot simpler, as you say.
Right. And that's just one example of many, which I think, again, is why, because I sometimes think, why did it take me so long to write this book? Because I'm a pretty fast writer. I know what I'm doing, largely speaking, with Django. And I think it was because there's so many decisions just like that. I mean, dozens and dozens of micro decisions where I have to think about it and then explain it. And I pick one and I explain the differences because I want to be, in some ways, I was trying to cram everything into this book. And it's a long book. I mean, it's almost 400 pages. But it's still, there's a lot I just took out eventually because I just couldn't fit it all in. And I'll get to it in other ways. I mean, one of the sections I'm most pleased with actually is the permissions area, because permissions is, I think the ORM and permissions are, I would say, the two things that advanced developers or professional developers spend a ton of time on. But there's not a, especially permissions, there's not a lot of good educational resources, really any that I've seen out there. And yet, the ability to create groups, to set permissions, you know, you on a form or on an action. So in the book, we set permissions for people who can see all the books, and you could change this to be individual books. And then when a payment goes through, we put in the view. I was really pleased with how elegant I made this code. As part of that action of the payment, you flip the permission on the user. And so I spent a lot of time trying to figure out how to make that clean, and I haven't seen it done before. So
yeah, no, and I think you're right that there aren't guides out there. I mean, people quite often there are issues on the developer mailing list or on the track about confusions around the permission system, and you know, it's quite powerful.
With all this,
but you have to understand.
I think again, yeah, people get dropped into these code bases, and you don't have the chance or the opportunity to learn or to build it up. So we build it up, and we talk about when do groups make sense, you know, how you handle permissions. Because at a minimum, on most sites, you're going to have some at least three levels. Probably you're going to have, you know, your admin, your super users. You're going to have, you know, in a newspaper example, the editor who can do more things, and then maybe a writer. So at least three permissions. You know, another example would be like if you had a university, you'd have teachers and students. They'd have different permissions. But this crops up right away and is it's hard to think about. And if you are architecting and building this out and you get it wrong, it's a lot more work to backfill it than to get it right the first time.
Yeah. And again, like that's exactly right. When you're talking about anything security related, it's very important to just take the extra time to measure twice and cut once, because you can't afford a mistake.
Right. But how do you learn that? You know, this book, I think, will really help people. Really, you learn it through pain and making the mistake on the job. And you know, embeds the learning, but is not the best way to do it.
Well, but to do it in a sandbox environment is perfectly good and safe, and it's a good learning experience. But to do it on a production environment is like, wow, hang on, that was my business.
Yeah, and I mean, and again, this is maybe it's top of mind because I've gotten a number of emails just this week from people who read my books and have said, hey, I have a new job and I'm in this new code base, and you know, and I tell them like that. That's how it is for me too. You know, I mean, it's just, that's how it is for anyone. And in those environments, you need to, well, hopefully there's someone there who can tee up some, you know, just how do you eat an elephant? It's like one bite at a time, right? Like find some smaller things, like don't have some big integration, you know, testing thing that they just toss at you, you know, find some small stuff. Like it's going to take a month at least to wrap your head around it. And even then, you know, a lot of times on these big sites, you know, there's areas where you just kind of go like, ugh, like, I hope I don't have to touch that. You know, you're not going to be responsible for everything.
There's errors like that on every big site. That's, you know, somebody wrote it, they did it.
There's some places where I'm like, oh, I don't, you know, if you work on it for a year or two, you're like, oh, I just don't want to touch that. That's why you have tests and you have confidence. what else? Oh, so search. So this is something, actually my talk at DjangoCon in September is going to be on search. So I wanted to include search in the book, but figuring out how to do that, because search is infinitely complex, and most people just jump right to using Elastic or you know, these Solr, you know, these full throttled solutions with no buildup of how do you do it. And so I'm really pleased with the chapter where we add search, because you want it in almost every site. And we talk about forms, we talk about filtering, and just layering on the complexity. Then you can build in Postgres built-in support. Then you can get to, you know, Elastic if you need it. You can do hosted solutions, but just doing a step-by-step solution, because, you know, search too, if you're using, you know, let's take Elastic locally, you have to spin up another server or container. Like it's very non-trivial to get that going. And most people just drop into that. They don't have a chance to build it up and think about like, well, how does it really work? And really it's a form and a filter, and you're passing the data back and forth. And if you go step-by-step, you know, just for me, with my understanding, I've spent quite a bit of time with search on various sites, but having to go through it to teach it myself really helped me, and I think it'll help others understand what's going on there, because it gets complicated fast with, like, you know, weights and you know, all these things. But fundamentally, it's, you know, user input and a filter of some kind.
Yeah, and like as well, the if you can get away without jumping all the way to Elasticsearch or whatever, it's worth doing because there's a maintenance overhead to that. To run an Elasticsearch cluster stably in production is actually difficult. You know, people have a full-time job doing just that.
Teams have full-time jobs doing that. Yeah, especially on e-commerce sites. Well, and we had Simon Willison was on recently, and on his personal site, I mean, he's got a fairly basic implementation and it works just fine. And I think that's another thing I want to get across is it's okay to have basic implementations if they work. That's quite elegant. I mean, Jacob Kaplan-Moss gave a talk at PyCon this year on static files and talking about you don't need to jump right to a CDN right away. You know, there is value in the basics and getting those right. And and even with, you know, just to go back to search, though, I mean, I did a bunch of research and it's implemented a lot of different ways. You know, you can do it as a post request. You can do it as a get request. You know, you can do it with function-based views that are just 50 lines long. You can do it with a class-based view, as I do in the book, where it's like 3 or 4 lines. You just update the get context data. So I always strive just in my own code. And certainly when I'm teaching, I want to explain it. But if there is an elegant, accurate way to do something, I will go for that every time.
Yeah. And what's nice is the danger with the class-based view is you just kind of fill in the one class attribute that does the magic and you don't understand exactly going on. But if you build it up and told the story, then that understanding is great.
Right. And that is true. That is the danger of class-based views. You're just, you know, turtles stacked on top of themselves. And so if you just drop in and change one thing, it does feel like magic. But I do, especially with the user registration chapters of the book, and actually throughout, I'll say, if I'm going to do some magic, I'll say, hey, here's how I figured this out. So, for example, like updating templates with, you know, the email that new users get, you know, I don't just jump to the file. I say, okay, well, how do I know where this is? How do I figure it out? It's like, well, I copy paste a part of it and I go into, you know, the Django source code and go, oh, where is it? It's like, oh, it's not there. Oh, because it's part of Django AllAuth because I'm using Django AllAuth.
Yeah, right.
Oh, and so now it's in Django AllAuth. Now I can see where it is. And now I can see, oh, there's a structure. And now I can see the other templates. And now when I told you how to create the template directory structure in a certain way, because Django AllAuth uses accounts versus Django uses registration. So I actually spend quite a bit of time explaining how you figure this out, because I want to like teach people how to fish, not just give it to them. Because I agree, like that is, it doesn't help if I just give it to you with no context.
Right. And template loading is a moderately complicated topic. People get confused about that. And then how do I override a template? And how can I extend this template so that I just fill in this one block without having to, you know, re-implement the whole thing? And to go through that is actually, you know, something that people will learn a lot from, I think.
I think so. I hope so. It took a lot of time to write.
So what about,
that's the thing with, yeah.
Go on. Well, I was going to say, so what about performance? Are you doing anything there? Because you go to deploy, it's all right. You know, you're testing it locally. It works. Have you done anything to, when you put it up there, you find it, your site crashes. Why? Because you've got, I don't know, slow queries. Have you talked about that?
Yeah, we do. We have a whole chapter on performance. So there's two ways you can do it. So one is you can do things locally. So again, with the benefit of Docker, you can test your production environments locally. So bare minimum things, Django debug toolbar you need to add. I talk through that. And there's actually a gotcha with using it in Docker that I walk through, because you have to find the port? There's something a little tricky, but I walk you through it. But then, yeah, so you want to install Django debug toolbar, look at your queries, and then things like select related, prefetch related, these are go-to tools to basically, they're complicated topics, but basically if you have a lot of queries, often if you can boil it down to one big one, that's more performant, but you don't really know until it's a production environment. So I talk about things like you will probably want to implement these, but don't just do it locally. Like put the site up live, you know, things will appear that need to be addressed. Same with adding indexes to databases. You may think, oh, I'll just index a whole ton of stuff, you know, the user ID, but you should hold off and the problems will present themselves. And there is a cost to, you know, indexes, for example. So all these things I talk through, you know, compressing your front end assets, caching. There's, you know, Django has 4 different built-in layers per site, per view, template, and then low-level API. So I talk about how you would do it, but then also say, you know, don't necessarily just jump into doing it, because that's, you know, premature optimization is a problem.
It's root of all evil, no?
Yeah. Was it Donald Knuth, I think? But, you know, because you're going to get it wrong. You know, when you put your site out live, don't worry. Like, people are like, what am I going to work on? Like, things will jump out at you like, oh, this is on fire. That's on fire. That's actually the perfect time to optimize it. Not just saying, oh, I'm going to add Redis right off the bat. I think you should wait until you need it.
Yeah. And also where you think the performance bottlenecks will be, that's not where they'll be. They'll be somewhere totally different. And then you'll discover in production where those small number of performance bottlenecks are. You optimize those and all of a sudden your thing is fast. and you haven't actually had to do too much work.
Right. That is another trap, is that it's when you wait for the problems to present themselves and put themselves into a hierarchy, it's way less time. But, you know, again, how do you know what the problems are? I mean, you and I have a sense of these are the common things because we built a bunch of sites. We're familiar with Django. If you haven't done it, it's a constant just like, oh, my God, where did that come from? So the book sort of says, you know, here are the major things. Here's how you would do it. But, you know, I do give the advice of wait. Like, that's some pro advice like there. Wait if you can. There are plenty of, you know, if you're worried about those things, go talk to users. Don't prematurely optimize your site for a million users. Go get a million users and then you can figure it out.
Yeah, yeah, get 10 and then figure it out.
Yeah, but that's an engineering trap, right? It's engineering stuff is fun. And even on deployment, I talk about how, you know, there are deployment engineers for a reason, site reliability engineers. In fact, most engineers at a big company are working on deployment performance issues. And it's really fun to do because it feels like binary. Like you can look and see, oh, page load time got better, or, yeah, you know, our uptime increased. It feels very satisfying. But should that time be spent eking out those gains, or should you, you know, go talk to users and make, I don't know, like, let me pick on Quora, right? Like, hey, Quora, maybe I don't have to log in all the time to use it. Would that be a better thing than, you know, being proud of how fast your site loads? Probably. So those are like engineering traps that you get into because you can document it and it feels good, but is that what you should work on? I mean, generally, you probably want to work on what you don't want to do in a startup setting.
Yeah, I mean, as well, like in a way that it can be a bit like busy work, or, you know, it's like, yeah, I feel like I'm doing stuff. I'm answering emails, exactly, but I haven't got anything done at the end of the day because I spent all day in the inbox. That's not productivity. I spent all day improving my deploy, but
You do get something done, but it's probably not the most important thing. I mean, that was something. So I started.
Well, it depends on the scale, right? Depends on who you are.
Depends on the scale. So I was at Quizlet, which is now quite a big site, very early on. And I give the founders a lot of credit that we, about once a week, several people on the engineering team, as a small engineering team, would go into schools and visit and just see how it was being used. And if you think about it, that's a huge cost, right? 5 days a week, that's a tenth of the workday. And then really the whole rest of the day, we're talking about things that we would learn. And that was a great way to see how things are actually being used. You know, things that we didn't think about would come up. I mean, spending the time with your users is hard to do, but always the best thing to do. Again, and it doesn't feel as good maybe as these known performance issues that you want to address. But there you are.
Yeah, I mean, I could go on all day about this. Like, man, let's drop that.
How does that relate to you with, you know, being a Django fellow? Do you see these sort of 80-20s, or these areas where engineers get really excited about working on stuff? Maybe it's not the most relevant.
I mean, the thing that comes up is when people want to propose a feature and they want it to be an exact way so that in their particular code base, they've just got one line of code to write and it all magically does that. But the cost of that is extra API surface area for the entire user base of Django. And on balance, it's probably not worth it for the entire user base of Django, when what we could see is that this one line for that one person could just be like half a dozen lines overriding one function in a class-based view. And we'll say, no, look, we're not going to add that extra API surface area over the whole API because there's this quick fix available. And then they get upset about that because they want it to be just so for them. And it's, and you're like, well, you know, you could put that in your own project, or you could put that in a third party app, or, and that's,
right. Well,
that's the difficulty is balancing.
You have to make them feel your pain and also convey that you understand their position, because everyone is, you know, everyone views the world through their own eyes. So.
Yeah. And so that's treading that balance where Django is useful for the majority use case. And we include the hard batteries, you know, the things that are difficult for a user to implement themselves, we'll include. But we can't necessarily include absolutely everything for absolutely every use case, because then it becomes unworkable.
Right. It's a similar tension. Yeah, I mean, in the book too, I mean, especially around, well, there's so many areas where I say, you know, hey, Django's got your back here, but let me explain how they have your back, you know, security, user registration, performance. I mean, there are way more things built in that you don't have to think about versus these toggles that you can customize. And even the ones you can customize, I think Django does a fantastic job of sort of being objective about it, you know, depending on, like, caching, for example, offering, okay, maybe here are these different levels, and, you know, there's always, Django always gives you the option to roll up your sleeves and dive in and get crazy if you want, which is fantastic, because some frameworks don't, you know, they're really great out of the box, but they're hard to customize. Django's a little bit more work, but it's eminently customizable across the board, which is its strength.
Yeah. Okay. One thing I like about what you've talked about, the way you've talked about all the topics around Django that you've experienced in the book, is it reminds me of a conversation we had back in episode one or episode two, when we were like, you know, Django is almost a front end framework in that if you look at the whole stack, you know, it's not front end, it's not CSS, it's not JavaScript, it's not React, it's not whatever. But if you look at provisioning VMs or the database servers or Docker or any, it's kind of a bit front end. And what it sounds is like you've placed Django inside that wider environment. And that kind of sounds really cool.
Yeah, no, I've tried to. And the thing I like about having these, again, these three books is I feel like I've, you know, it's beginner, intermediate, advanced, and I'm constantly going to be working on them, updating them. And both as Django evolves and also just it's a chance for me to keep improving how I explain these topics. So, yeah, so it's an exciting time. And I should mention, so the first.
So if I want to pick up the book, how do I do that?
Yes. So you can go to the website, djangaforprofessionals.com, which we'll link to in the show notes. And you can read the first two chapters in the introduction there, which will walk you through Docker and some projects and talk about what's going to come. It's available as an ebook, and it will be on Amazon, print, and Kindle by the time this episode comes out. If you have a choice, I would recommend the ebook because you will get updates. I can't do that on print and Kindle, but if you want a standalone copy, you should go ahead and get those on Amazon.
And if I wanted to get all the books, is there a nice little bundle?
Yes. So for the ebooks, there are bundles. So if you buy, so each book is $39, and if you buy two, you get $10 off. If you buy all three, you get $20 off. There's links on my site, wsvincent.com/books, which I'll put in there. So yeah, trying to make it easy for people to understand and get to. And, you know, for me, actually, I've spent a lot of time, all my time creating, and now I'm switching my brain around to, you know, the marketing and displaying. I'll probably do a video where I walk through the project and show, you know, a couple minute video show, hey, here's what we've built. This is actually something I'd like to add for my first two books, is to walk through, because the first book goes through five different projects. And I think people kind of buy it based on trust. I think like they read other tutorials I have, but I can and should walk through and show a quick, hey, here's what we're going to build kind of video.
Okay.
Even though a lot of it is the plumbing, which is the interesting part.
And if I wanted to get update on those kind of contents, I should subscribe to your email or your
That's right. Yeah. So I have a newsletter. We'll link to it, where I do maybe once a month only important stuff, linking to new tutorials that I've written, to podcasts. I see amazing stuff out there. So it's very intermittent. But yeah, I'll link to the newsletter. That's the best way to be updated. There's also an RSS feed through that is available and is on the site. I'll link to and it shows up in the Django has a community feed, right? I'm not sure who's in charge of that, but it's on the Django community feed.
Yeah, so you submit and then we just verify that it's a valid Django topic blog, and then it gets added to that feed.
Okay. So someone submitted me, which is very kind of them. So when I publish things with the Django tag on my site, it pops up.
So. Yeah. So if you go to djangoproject.com and the community tab, you can find the link to that feed.
Yeah. That's a really good feed for people. Yeah. So it's out there. Email me feedback. I'm really proud of it. I want to see how people think, but it's been a full year of work and I think it's really going to help people out.
Well, well done. And have a little celebration to get it out the door.
Yes. Yes, I will.
Right. Thanks very much. That's everything from us this week. Take care and join us for the regular show next time. Bye-bye.
Okay.